Fuzzy Math?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving. From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. China is the world's largest source of carbon emissions, and now it's putting forth a carbon target in a run-up to next month's climate change talks in Copenhagen. The United States has said it would bring carbon caps to the table as well, but there's a difference in the numbers. Marketplace's Scott Tong joins us now from Shanghai. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Steve.
So what exactly is China committing to?
Well, it will slow the rate of growth of its carbon emissions. Specifically, Beijing says it will reduce what it calls carbon intensity by 40% to 45%. Think of it this way, Steve. Say I gain 5 pounds every year, and let's just assume it's true, and by next year, I will commit to reducing my weight gain intensity. I'll just gain 3 pounds next year and maybe 2 after that, which is pretty good. But my doctor might say, you know what, that's not good enough. And that's the bottom line here. China's overall emissions would still go up.
Yeah, but other countries are committing to cutting emissions. So is China doing enough here?
Well, plenty of climate scientists would say this doesn't pass the laugh test. The world is running out of time, many of them say, and China's not doing any serious lifting. And China has to, because in the coming decades, the developing countries, India and China, they're going to be the ones that are the major part of the world's carbon footprint, Steve.
And in China's defense, Scott?
Well, listen, they would say it's a number on the table, so let the negotiations begin. And the developing countries have always said, listen, back in Kyoto in 97, we all agreed that the poorer countries would do less. You know, the language of Kyoto was common but differentiated responsibility. And Beijing would also say, look, per capita, China is still poor. Per capita, China doesn't emit anywhere near what the Americans emit. As one environmental activist put it, the Western world, back in the day, they went to the CO2 bank and they robbed it. And they didn't leave any left for the emerging economies. That is the Beijing argument.
All right. Marketplace's Scott Tong joining us from Shanghai. Scott, thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Asian shares closed lower today. The Chinese benchmark down more than 3.5%. European markets are mostly mixed right now. In London and Frankfurt, shares are lower, but French shares are higher, just by about 0.6%. Numbers yesterday here at home, some gains on Wall Street. The S&P added just under 0.5%. The Dow tacked on about 30 points to close at 10,464. After today's holiday, our attention will likely turn to shopping. On Monday, known as Cyber Monday to some, many of us start retail shopping from our work computers. And the deals we'll see? Well, this year, for the first time, some hotel chains are chiming in, as Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Chains like Starwood and Affinia Hotels are offering deals on stays here and abroad. Mark Woodworth of PKF Hospitality Research says the traditional Cyber Monday purchase usually involves tangible items. But he says services like spa treatments are increasingly popular presents.
Why not have hotels package their services in such a way that makes it easier for that consumer to buy, particularly via the internet?
Woodworth says there's good reason hotels are taking advantage of Cyber Monday this year.
While demand has contracted dramatically as a result of weak economic environment, we've had significant increases in supply opening up in many markets around the country.
So there's a glut of hotel rooms and not enough bodies to fill them. He says demand will increase in the second half of next year, and by early 2011, prices will go up again. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
A recent study says there are some big challenges facing food assistance organizations all around the world. Supply, price, funding. Researchers at the Milken Institute say there are some innovative ways to address those concerns. Betsy Zeidman is a fellow there, and she authored the report. She's with us now. Good morning.
Hi, how are you, Steve?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you.
What prompted you to investigate doing food assistance this new way?
Well, we'd been in conversation with the Gates Foundation about this issue of aid volatility and how many problems around the world were made more difficult because aid was delivered in such unpredictable ways.
And what are some of the ideas that you've come up with?
Well, we've looked at a number of tools in the financial tool basket that are used and are not necessarily unusual but haven't been applied to this issue. So, for instance, forward purchases, making a commitment after the harvest when prices are at a lower cost, not necessarily getting the food at that time, but making the commitment and entering the contract at that time. And then the food can get delivered when it's needed, but it gets locked in at a lower cost.
Sort of like hedging.
It's similar, but this is an absolute commitment to get the food, and it's a much better way of budgeting and planning for both financial purposes, but also for having the actual food when they need it.
I mean, it seems like we're talking about the problem overseas, right? But is there any way you can sort of apply these solutions right here at home, here in the United States?
Well, I think some of those things are already applied. I mean, some of the tools we talk about, like forward purchases, kind of, the people do that in this country already. You make a commitment when you're going to buy so you can lock in a price and lock in delivery. The real issue with that happens overseas because the transportation issues are so difficult. The actual financial markets in these countries are very different, so you have a lot less flexibility. Those are the kinds of things that we're thinking about.
A lot of people think, you know, that the problem is overseas, but not a lot of people realize that the undernourished and people who are hungry are right here at home.
It is a huge problem here as well. There's no question about it.
So why haven't these been already put into practice, do you think? Or why aren't these ideas, you know, widespread?
Well, they're very well widespread within the private sector. Within the humanitarian aid community, it's a change. It's a change from the traditional model of asking the governments for money, getting the money, and going out and spending the money. They're not institutions that have been in business to think strategically about how to manage their financial risk and use financial tools. It's changing. The World Food Program has a pilot program with forward purchase that has been quite successful. They've cut their delivery time from 3 months to 1 month for many of these products, and they're looking at expanding it. But then we would like to encourage more use of those tools.
Well, Betsy Zeidman, a research fellow at the Milken Institute, we do appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Same to you.
Finally, officials at San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge are trying to close a big budget hole. One way they're looking to do that is to charge visitors for an up-close look at the bridge. One day, tourists could go to the top of each tower or even climb on its cables. Now, that's something they'd have to pay me to do. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.